Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hooked on Score. I'm your host, Rick Urban, and with me today we have special guest composer Anne Nikitin. Anne is an Emmy-nominated composer, best known for her work on the critically acclaimed heist movie American Animals and the BAFTA-winning film The Imposter. Anne is joining us today, fresh off of her number one on Netflix series, Fate the Winx Saga. Anne composed the music for this young adult fantasy series, which it has elements of Harry Potter. It has elements of The Vampire Diaries, which, of course, it was created by Brian Young, who created The Vampire Diaries. I would say it has elements of the TV show Once Upon a Time. It's sort of a mystic show about a school for magical fairies that are going through the sort of learning years in their lives. And it debuted this weekend at number one on Netflix. So I watched the first episode last night. It hooks you really quick. But the composer is Anne Nikitin. Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I had a chance to watch the first episode of Fate the Winx Saga on Netflix last night. And there's an obvious relation to Harry Potter because of the fact that they're school children in this school for fairies, like magical fairies, like of the Tinkerbell variety. And they all have different powers. So could you tell us a little bit about the series from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. So definitely there have been comparisons to Harry Potter, but it is definitely more edgy and more adult, I should say. I certainly wouldn't let my kids right now watch it. And, you know, there are sort of, you know, there's smoke in there. There's swearing. They're quite sassy. There's the typical high school trials and tribulations that teenagers go through. But they also have magical powers. So on top of all of that, they have to get used to using their magic, learn to use their magic wisely. They have to be taught discipline, not to use magic on each other, even as much as they want to. And they also have to learn to fight the monsters who are trying to infiltrate their school. So there's quite a lot on their shoulders.
Yeah, it does get pretty dark when you're going throughout, even in the first episode. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's kind of going through pretty much of the sort of the fantasy type of genre. And then at the end of the first episode, it does sort of take a dark turn and it almost becomes more of a thriller horror type of genre. And that must have been really fun to score for you. How did you sort of deal with all of the different kind of genres you have to produce in this series?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. It does become quite dark. There are moments of horror, definitely, in the series. There are also a lot of comedic moments. You know, there's a lot of light and shade, basically. And as a composer, that's a lot of fun to work with. I had to start by creating sketches of ideas. And I started off by actually composing more of the horrific moments, more of the horror, and then trying to lighten that up. I tend to score a lot of thrillers and horrors and very depressing dramas and documentaries. So I sort of come from that background. I find that easier for some reason. That seems to be my niche. So dealing with the moments of lightness was a little trickier for me.
The sound palette, mainly due to, I think, the audience that this is directed for, has to be, you know, drastically different than the sort of large scale orchestra that you would have in Harry Potter, or even in the TV show Once Upon a Time, I think sort of has the same feel as this. But this is a much more, I guess, modern type of sound that I think the audience is looking for in this. But you also have to deal with a lot of pop songs and things like that, I noticed, and I'm guessing they're going to be inserted in a lot of this. How did you deal with trying to keep the sound consistent with all of the sort of placed music in there?
Yeah, well, that was a big factor. And so the original brief was to not go too big with this music. We wanted it to be quite intimate. I used a smaller ensemble rather than a large-scale orchestra, and I tried to incorporate synths and more modern sounds and fuse them with the classical, traditionally classical instruments. And also, as you say, there was a lot of source music, a lot of commercial music, and I worked very closely with the music supervisor, Matt Biffer. We were always on each other's meetings when it came to music. I needed to know what sort of commercial music they were finding. And it really helped me understand what my score should do. Brian was quite clear that he wanted the score to sound contemporary so that it wouldn't sort of jolt you out of the commercial music. He wanted to feel seamless.
Yeah, I noticed that for sure. There were many cues that kind of start where I couldn't tell if it was score or song. And I think that's going to be really helpful to make it seem organic, to so that the existing commercial music doesn't take you out of the scene. Because usually when that happens, it when they use a lot of existing commercial music, it usually takes me out of whatever I'm watching. But this one, it seems a little bit more organic than it usually does. So well done with that.
Oh, thank you. That means it was a success. It worked.
And this, it seems like it would be very fun to score something like this because, as I was saying, you are sort of mixing across genres, but you don't have to really worry about, I guess, grounding your music in reality, because the reality that they ground in the story is, you know, literally a world where fairies are existing and, you know, people can summon fire with their hands and all these different skills that they have. So it must have been nice because the gloves are kind of off. You could really do whatever you want without having to worry about any limitations. Was that an enjoyable process to score?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, this was a complete joy to score, not only because Brian and Judy and the team were so fantastic to work with, but I was brought on board early, just while they were still shooting and beginning to edit. And that gave me a lot of time to experiment with the kind of music, the kind of sound that we wanted for Fate. And as you say, it's an otherworldly kind of place, and they wanted an otherworldly kind of score for it. And the only kind of note that Brian gave me that he really insisted on was that he didn't want any kind of cliched twinkly fairy magic. So a couple of times I stuck in some twinkles and he was like, nope, get them out. That's not what we want. And I could completely see where he came from, and I completely agreed with him. So there was a lot more bass in there than twinkle. But I still wanted to make it feel ethereal and magical, and as well as giving it a real sense of darkness and electronic as well.
Yeah. I mean, right from the get-go, actually, even in the opening scene of the series, it's pretty dark right away. It's pretty much a thriller when you begin this, but then, you know, it lightens up a little bit. I have to tell you, when the main character, I don't want to spoil anything for those of you that haven't seen this yet, but when the main character's powers are presented, it's a pretty amazing scene. So well done on that one. Well, I wanted to ask a little bit about your background, Anne, but before we do that, I wanted to let our listeners know that Hooked on Score is now on Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com, patreon.com/hookedonscore, patreon.com/hookedonscore, what you can do is jump on a tier. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support the show. What are we going to give you for this money? Well, at the $5 a month category, we're going to give you bonus episodes. We're going to give you extra content. We're going to do video content. You're going to get extra reviews. But the big thing is we're going to be doing extra episodes. We're going to dive into films and review them. The first episode we're doing is The Mandalorian. Ben and I are going to discuss the entire series as well as that important last episode. So you can check that out at patreon.com/hookedonscore. It's a couple dollars a month, but it's really gonna help out the show and support us and keep these great guests coming to you every week, just like Anne. And going back to Anne, where did you kind of start? How did you get your start? And where did that bring you to this point as this composer for this Netflix series?
Well, I always loved music. I was slightly obsessed with it, like a lot of people are, I suppose. But I really wanted to write it ever since I was little. I didn't quite know how. I was just making things up, but that just sort of felt like my calling for my whole life. I never thought I would be able to make a living as a composer, but I just sort of followed my heart and kept on the path and became very lucky in that way. I ended up studying music at university in Montreal and then in the UK. And I studied classical, sort of avant-garde orchestral music, composition. And then I decided I really wanted to get into film music. I have a degree in English as well, and I really love storytelling. And I wanted to kind of have a life where I could fuse my passion, which is storytelling and music. And so film music seemed the obvious place to do that.
Montreal is such a nice town. It's I remember I've been there a couple times, and I remember we were kind of taking a tour of the city, and there was a couple different options. You could go to the museum or the hockey museum, and my wife's like, "All right, we're just going to go to the normal museum." And then we get to the normal museum of the history of Montreal. And of the five floors, three of them were hockey.
So it's so, best of both worlds for you guys.
So it must have been just writing music and playing hockey if you were going to school in Montreal. But sorry, I interrupted. So continue. So you're in school in Montreal.
I love it because I love Montreal, and I'm glad you stepped in and said it's a great city. It really was an incredible city to be a student in. Mm. And there's music everywhere, you know, from avant-garde concerts to indie rock and the jazz festival. It's just a brilliant scene to be inspired.
I don't know if they had this when you were going to school there, but we were just kind of walking around the streets. We had like a couple hours to kill before dinner, and we came upon this big line at this church, and they were saying it's a concert. And we were like, oh, like what kind of, they said it's a presentation of the organ with like a light show. And we were like, oh, that sounds pretty interesting. And they said it's only about a half an hour. And we're like, okay, great. So, you know, we have some time to kill anyways. And we have this long line, so it must be something pretty cool. So we get in this line and we go into this church. And we're expecting to see, you know, like an organist and, you know, a couple different lights. But it was the equivalent to a Pink Floyd-esque laser light show where they had...
Brilliant.
At one point, it felt like you were on a boat and the church was being flooded. Like there was waves coming at the windows of the... I don't know how they did it, but it was one of the coolest concert experiences I've ever been to in my entire life. And we just happened upon it in a church in Montreal. It was an amazing experience. Was there anything like that when you were there? Do you remember that at all? I don't know why I remember it so vividly. It was so amazing.
I mean, yeah, that sounds like Montreal. It was full of experimental places and art galleries and venues, and the nightclubs were incredibly cool. So yeah, I mean, it's a brilliant place to be if you want to be inspired and live a bohemian life and lap up the music and the art scene.
Did you have a primary instrument when you were beginning to write music?
I always played piano, and I was never a performer. In fact, I have some weird phobia about playing piano in public. And then I picked up guitar. I play guitar at home very badly, but enough to put it onto scores and pretend I was in a band at one point. But I've got a whole bunch of weird and wacky instruments in my studio, and I do like to just pick them up and put them in my scores, even though I don't know how to play most of them. But I just find it quite fun.
Yeah.
Making noises.
Back when we had the video on, I think I saw a gong in the background. Is that right? Or was that some sort of decoration that looks like a gong?
No, it's a gong. I like to
like a wind
hit
gong?
It and scrape it. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tam-tam, and I do like to kind of use that on things and make noises out of it.
So how did you get from Montreal to scoring films?
Well, there was a course in London at the Royal College of Music, and it was one of the only ones at the time that had film music courses. And otherwise, there were some in LA. And anyway, I decided to come to London, and I got into that college, and I completed my film music course there. And I thought I would land my dream job the next day after graduating. And of course, that never happens. So I got a day job and spent my nights scoring short films for people and just trying to practice my skills and meet people in the scene. And eventually my break came when I entered a competition that the BBC ran. It was a one-off, and it was to find a new TV composer. And I miraculously won that competition. And the prize was a commission to score a BBC Natural World program for BBC Two, which was my dream job, absolute dream job.
Wow.
And so I got to do that. And the director was really amazing. He really helped me through all the jargon and understanding, you know, what premixes were and final mixes and picture locks, you know, little things like that you don't really understand until you're doing it. And then after that, it just snowballed. It was really just getting that one commission and proving I could do the job. And then suddenly I had lots of commissions, and it's been really, I've been really lucky ever since then.
And when you were approaching, well, how did this film, or how did this series, rather, come about? How did you land this series?
Well, I'd worked with the music supervisor before on a film. He's the one who finds the commercial music. And we got along really well on the previous film, and he recommended me to Brian Young, the creator of this series. And so I had an interview with Brian, and we just really hit it off on the phone. We just laughed a lot, and we shared the same vision for the music. And I wrote a few sketches for him, which he really liked, and that was it.
Now, when you were writing the sketches, Was that just based on the conversations that you had about the series, or were you working to video when you did those initial sketches?
No, I don't recall seeing anything at that point. I was writing based on what he told me about the show. And I think I wrote 5 tracks and sent them all to him with some stems, and they played around in the edit and they seemed to be really working. Brian really liked them. And so, yeah, so that was a really good platform to start from.
Yeah, that's such an important skill, I think, for composers to have, is to just be able to produce music, I think, really just from conversations with the director, just to let them know that you are on the same page with them as far as the direction of the music. Because if you get the sound of the project down, singing it up to video is, you know, I mean, obviously it's not the easy part, but it's kind of the easy part once you have the sound down. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
In those initial discussions, did you already have all of the talks about the modern sound and the synth sort of orchestration, things like that? Did you already have that in hand?
Yeah. He told me he wanted something modern and not too twinkly, and something that had the Fate sound he was looking for. And it had to sort of be distinctive to the program, and it had to work with the commercial music. So, you know, having that, you know, I do really like limitations, and I like a good music brief. I find it really helps me understand what the director or creator is after. And Brian has a brilliant, articulate way of communicating music, even though he always says he doesn't. He really hits the nail on the head when he tells, you know, when he conveys what he wants from music. Yeah, so I think I got him. And, you know, it wasn't always easy. There were many scenes that weren't quite working, especially the lighter scenes, the happy scenes when the girls are having a good time. Those were quite hard to nail because it was sort of, you don't want to sort of go cheesy and too happy, but it also had to feel light. So it was trying to find that balance that took a little time, but we got there in the end.
Yeah, I think those are movies and parts of movies that I think really, it's almost a thankless job for the composer when you can get through a really light scene and not be cheesy and not take the audience out of it. Because when you speak with actors and directors, humor in everything is such a big part of what they're looking for, even in primarily dramatic movies and series. They're always looking for a little bit of humor injected into everything they do. And for composers, that's often time to where you have to be, I guess, a little cautious of doing things like Mickey Mousing and accenting things that would make it kind of over the top.
Yeah.
So I think that's a real challenge to do.
Yeah, exactly. You have to try and avoid the cliched plucked strings and things like that. But you're exactly right. It is harder to write a light score because it can be quite cliched. There are certain tropes that composers use for creating funny moments, which aren't bad. It's just that we didn't want to use them here.
Was there, this is a Netflix series, were there any challenges with that? Does Netflix sort of inject themselves into the creation on the production side, or did you really just have to deal with the director and the producers?
I was definitely mostly working with Brian, the creator, and Judy, the producer, discussing feedback through them, but Netflix also had notes for every episode, definitely. They always do. But luckily, they were quite minor notes, and it wasn't too crazy. I think they were more hands-on with commercial music. They needed that to be right, and they were quite happy with the score after episode one. I think they had some faith in how it was going to sound. So it was good, yeah.
Yeah, it's such an important thing to get that first episode down for a series. It's there's so many eggs in that one basket on that first episode.
Absolutely. That's the one that takes the longest. There's a lot of going back and forth. Sometimes you can throw a whole score out the door if you watch it back and everyone realizes, oh, it's too dark or too light and, you know, a certain way, and everybody has to be happy. All the cooks have to be happy. So yeah, F1 took a while to get out the door. And then after that, it was much easier.
And for the, since this is a Netflix film, you know, it's primarily going to be watched on computers. And I mean, at this point, it's probably going to be watched on phones and iPads.
No. But you're right.
I actually watched on my smart TV with a decent, you know, audio setup. But was there anything that you did as far as mixing to sort of translate to the small screen, the smallest of screens?
That is a good question. No, I mean, I mix as if it's going to be played in the cinema. You know, I want it to be mixed in that way. I think all composers do that. In the dub, you know, I think they do the same thing, but they so when I'm mixing with my mixer, we still monitor it through small sort of mediocre stereo speakers just to hear how it would sound on a device with poor speakers. So we do make sure it works for both cinematic speakers and the less attractive stereo speakers. But yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a hallmark of experienced composers and mixers, that they always have a set of high fidelity speakers and then they have their B model,
yeah, exactly.
If you will. it kind of goes back to the Yamahas that you see in every mixing studio, you know, in the world, where they have the big fancy ones that are high fidelity, and then they have their, you know, set of, I guess, warm studio monitors that are more realistic.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking with a mixer, and I think he had, you know, everything from the big speakers to, you know, a set of earbuds to, I think he said what he primarily used to mix TV shows was he bought the sound bar that was the most, like the highest selling sound bar that year.
Yeah.
So that's what most people had in their homes,
yeah.
You know, and he mixed, you know, off of that. I mean, balancing it obviously with probably really high-end monitors,
yeah.
But, you know, making sure you can hear it on everything. I know a lot of bands, when they cut an album, back when people listened to music in their car, they would check the CD, literally, you know, in the car.
Yeah.
You would take the CD from the engineer and you go into the parking lot, put it in your car, listen to it in your car, and if it sounds good there, then it's like, all right, well, this is where people are going to be listening to it, so.
Exactly.
So, yeah, when you're checking, what are you listening for when you are listening to a cue critically? Are you going in depth into like individual frequencies? Are you just trying to manage the high end with the low end and things like that?
Well, I'm quite a mix freak and I'm quite a control freak, I should say, when it comes to mixing. I just want everything to pop nicely. I want there to be a lovely warm bass that you're going to hear through those B type speakers, and I want to be able to hear all the little details in the higher frequencies and mids as well. My mixer, who I work with a lot, is very good at that, balancing things out for me. But yeah, but I always, always play every cue against the dialogue. So we'll do a preliminary mix of how I would love it to sound in an ideal world, and then we'll play it against the dialogue. And I'll have to say, oh, look, as much as I love that violin, we're just going to have to bring it down because we've got to hear her talk. And they're just going to bring the whole cue down in the dub if we don't do that. So yeah, I'm very conscious of how the music has to work against the sound effects and the dialogue as well.
And for this series, was it similar to a network series where there are, you know, everything is kind of done at the last minute, so to speak? Everything is constantly evolving? Or was everything kind of in its final cut stage when you got the video?
No, so for this one, I mean, sometimes I'm brought on very late, you know, after it's been cut and they're just waiting to put the music on. For this one, I was brought on board very early, during the shoot still, and at the very beginnings of the edit. So for me, that was a very good experience in that I had time to experiment with music and the sound of Fate. And I had quite a lot of music to give to the editors to start putting in, rather than having a lot of guide music in there from other shows, which can be problematic when the director starts to fall in love with it. So luckily, I was able to avoid some of that. There's always going to be guide music, but luckily for me, most of it wasn't working very well. So I did feel like I had a clean slate, in a way, an opportunity to create the sound, a unique sound to this show.
That's almost
unheard of.
That's a feeling of relief whenever when you're listening to temp music or guide music and the director says, I don't know what they were thinking, you got to do something totally different than this. It's almost like a relief to the composer. You're like,
yeah,
oh, thank God.
No, it really is. I do love it, because the worst is when they go, oh, we love this music, it's going to be really hard for you to replace it. And I think, oh, no. But yeah, luckily, there wasn't that much of this in this case.
And as far as the palette, I know you said a lot of it is synth-based. Were you using any live instruments or anything like that? Or is it all primarily in the box?
No, I recorded an ensemble, I think, if I recall, I had 10 players. We recorded at a few studios in London, at Abbey Road and at Rack Studios. And then because the pandemic set in, I also had to record musicians remotely. So that was quite painful, preparing everything with my orchestrator for these musicians to take and play individually at home.
That's kind of the norm now. Everybody that I talk to.
Yeah, they had to do that.
All the composers are going through that now, where they are learning to deal with that. Anybody that's had a big project this year is now an expert at home recording of musicians remotely.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot more work, and, you know, it can work beautifully, and especially when the ensemble is smaller. But there is nothing like playing all together in a studio. Because the first two episodes were recorded remotely. That's when lockdown had just happened. And luckily, when the remaining four had to be recorded, the studios had just started to open again. And so we all got into the studio, and it was just, I think we just laughed and giggled the whole time, because we couldn't believe we were with other humans and hearing music being played together as an ensemble. And it was such a thrill to be able to hear the music that way, and to be able to give notes back and, you know, mix things slightly differently than you would have. So yeah, there's definitely a benefit to the studio.
Yeah, and this is kind of the golden era of Netflix is the right word, but because of lockdown and theaters being closed, and pretty much anything that you want to do besides watching your TV is closed, I imagine you're going to get a much bigger audience than you even normally would with Netflix, because of the pandemic situation. So it's sort of prime for for viewing eyes in this time, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I feel so awful for all the people who have lost their jobs and the theatres closing and musicians are just having a really rough time, you know. And so I feel terrible saying this, but, you know, as composers for the screen, it's been quite a busy time, really. There's a lot of content being made now and the phone's ringing a lot and I can't quite believe it, really. So yeah, it's booming.
Yeah, I know. When talking with other composers, I've been hearing a lot of concern, not for this period, but as far as the lag, because since, you know, there is there was probably a period most of last year when the production was pretty much shut down. Then there's always, you know, like a year or two lag between the production and the post-production. So a couple composers were worried that there might be, we might go through the pandemic in a year or two when everything is supposed to be, you know, in post. But I think that, you know, there are so many different projects coming out of, you know, the Zoom world, even, you know, whole full movies recorded on phones and remotely and things like that. I was looking at some production notices and there's a lot of production happening where people are now, you know, recording scenes and actual finished products from their own homes. So I think it's just a part of evolution that we are, you know, we always create in the, like you were saying, you love restrictions. We sort of thrive in the era of restrictions if you're any kind of creative, I think.
No, absolutely. And there are a lot of documentaries being made now because, you know, I think they're probably slightly easier to make in terms of the shoot. And you can shoot interviews via Zoom. I know that's been happening. And also, you know, drama productions are opening up now. I know of a lot of them that are about to shoot this spring. And there are some countries where you can go to and shoot, you know, with certain social distancing restrictions, but they're not as closed. So I think it's all happening with drama and documentary.
Well, on that front, do you have any projects coming up after Fate that you can discuss here on the show?
I am working on a documentary about Marilyn Monroe, which I'm very excited about, but I can't say more than that. I was slightly obsessed with her when I was a kid, and I don't know why, I just, I had her album for some reason when I was 12, and I loved all the songs from her movies, and I don't know, I just really, her and Elvis, and I always wanted them to get together when I was a kid. I get to score a documentary about her, which I'm very excited about.
Well, again, I want to let everybody know that the show, Fate the Winx Saga, is on Netflix as you hear this. I believe when I looked at it yesterday, it was number one on Netflix.
It was.
That's a good spot to be in. So everybody go check out the show and listen to Anne's music. And I really want to thank you for being with us today, Anne. I know it was a little bit of a challenge with the Zoom delay, but I'm actually very impressed as to how we were able to adjust our conversation skills.
I know.
Every time you say something, you just kind of have to wait about 3 seconds and then you get the response.
It's like the olden days when you called somebody in Australia and you have to wait for about 10 seconds.
Well, again, thank you so much, Anne, for being with us today. Do you have any closing thoughts for our audience? I always ask that to our composers, and then I ramble a little bit here to give them a chance to think of something to say. But with the Zoom built in, you might already have some built-in delay there. Do you have any closing thoughts for our audience?
I wish I could say I did, but you've made me so nervous now. My mind's gone blank. But thank you for having me. It was really fun, and you know, it's been fun to talk about this show, which I've really loved being a part of. And yeah.
It's if it sounds like it's not your thing, you might be surprised that it is your thing. I know when I first looked it up, I was like, oh, a young adult fantasy series. But you get sort of hooked pretty quickly.
So I
encourage everybody to check out Fate the Wing Saga on Netflix. And again, Anne Nikitin is the composer. Thank you so much, Anne, for being with us today. And we will see all of you next week on another episode of Hooked on Score.
All right, everyone. That's our show. Bye.